Hello, everybody. Welcome into episode 35 of the Young Lads Podcast. Peter Defee Jr. here alongside Harris Eisenberg. Harris, I heard you had a little bit of lacrosse this weekend. How'd that go before we get into this episode?
Yeah, in an absolute monsoon. And the last place you want to be in a monsoon is Upper Manhattan, you know, where the Harlem River's just running. And it just looks like it looks like hell. But yeah, you know, cool to call a lacrosse game and back for another one in a couple weeks. So yeah, hopefully the weather's better.
Yeah, I mean, the weather's been beautiful down here. So, and naturally, with the weather turning beautiful, it's time to, or that means it's time for opening day's baseball, which is tomorrow. So happy opening day eve to all those celebrate. We got a couple of news and notes to get to before we really get into maybe like a preview of how we think this season's going to shape out, and then some college baseball, because some big series this last weekend, and then I know we weren't on last week, so we have to talk about the series the week before. And I got some numbers actually that I want to bring about with the Virginia Wake Forest series that we didn't get to talk about last week. Just a little bit of some news coming from the Red side. Matt McClain underwent successful surgery. He had a torn labrum in his left shoulder. Timetable to return is TBD. And I shouldn't say torn labrum. It just says to repair his labrum. So I can't speculate whether or not it was actually fully torn, partially torn, whatever it is. Somebody that's, you know, as somebody that's had a labrum issue before, those are not fun to come back from at all. So hopefully speedy recovery to him. And then Jordan Montgomery finally signed. So now all of the big starting pitcher, free agents, and, you know, guys that Boris represents get signed. He signs for basically a 1-1, 1-year, $25 million deal with the vesting option. If he gets 10 games started, which I assume he would be, or he would, he gets another $20 million for 2025. If he gets 18 games started, it's $23 million. And if he has 25 or more, I believe that was the number, 25 or more, he gets $25 million again. So basically a 1-1 year with a lot. I don't think it's an opt-out, because if he gets those 10 starts, then he's under contract with the Diamondbacks for 1 year, $20 million. So basically a 2-year deal, barring any unforeseen injuries, which, you know, we were talking about it last year when Rodon was coming back from injury. We didn't know when he was actually going to start because he missed all the spring training, and he still had to basically get ramped up, and Montgomery missed all the spring training. He's not injured though, so he doesn't have to come back from an injury at all, but and rehab. But I'm interested to see, at what point does Blake Snell make his first start, and at what point does Jordan Montgomery make his first start, because they both missed all the spring training.
Yeah, I'm interested to see it. I mean, it's kind of similar on the hitting side. J.D. Martinez signs with the Mets, and he's going to start the year in AAA. So do these two? I know Snell, you know, got in, you know, a week before the season started, but Montgomery's literally missing all his spring training. Does he go make a few AAA starts? Does he, you know, throw a bunch of sim games the first month of the season before he gets out there? I don't know. But, you know, looking at the contract, obviously, you know, we were talking before we hit the air here, how much Scott Boras has messed up this whole thing. But the contract is kind of what you'd expect for a guy of Jordan Montgomery's stature, in terms of the fact that he just hasn't stayed healthy, you know, historically. Now, the last couple of seasons he has, and has been one of the better pitchers in baseball, especially since joining the Cardinals via the Yankees. But yeah, he was probably out there looking for a long-term big money deal, and maybe teams weren't willing to give him the long-term deal. I don't know, but, you know, in terms of other guys like Snell, I expected long-term deal. Matt Chapman, long-term deal. Cody Bellinger expected a little bit longer term and a little bit more money. Again, these are all Boris clients who had the ball drop on him. So, you know, I think the deal is good in terms of the fact that maybe the Diamondbacks are a little scared of his health, but it's super late for him to sign, and I don't know how this is going to play out.
Yeah, and then they also got Eduardo Rodriguez this year too, after he opted out with the Detroit Tigers. He's going to start the season on the IL. But you talk about a Diamondbacks team that kind of made a lot of moves after making the World Series, you know, unprecedented World Series run last year. They have Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly still. Then you get Eduardo Rodriguez. Brandon Pfaff is expected to make a little bit of a bump. But now you have Jordan Montgomery. So that's a pretty good starting five there. You know, you just have to see where the bullpen's going to be at the end of the year. But, you know, this is a Diamondbacks team that kind of thinks that their window's open. You got not Pete Carroll. You still Corbin Carroll still there. You got Ketel Marte. You signed back Gurriel Jr. You made the trade for Suarez. So I wonder if they think that, hey, like our window opened up last year a lot sooner than we thought. Let's try to go for it. And with Montgomery, you basically have 2 years of him. You have a couple of years with E-Rod. You still have a couple of years left with Gallen and Kelly. So I wonder if they're thinking, okay, last year wasn't a fluke. It was just the beginning of our window being open. So let's try to make a run for it now.
I think they agree with exactly what you're saying, Peter. And I told you this a couple podcasts ago, that they wouldn't have re-signed all these guys or signed the new guys that are on the team if they didn't think that they were going for it. Now, the Dodgers are obviously the class of the division, and the Giants are expected to get better. I think if the Giants don't get better this year, then something is just severely wrong with that organization. But with this whole wild card thing, all you got to do is get in, and you never know what can happen. Look at the Diamondbacks last year. They get in the wild card, and they do some damage. They make it all the way to the World Series. So, I mean, look at the last World Series since this wild card series became a thing, right? The Phillies, 2022, they win the wild card series against St. Louis. They make the World Series. 2023, Diamondbacks. So, all you got to do is get in.
I'm trying to find this projected lineup for the Diamondbacks that MLB posted. I can't find it right now, but yeah, I mean, the Dodgers are still going to win 95 plus games. So you're going to have to win every bit of 100 games like the Giants did what in 2021 was that when they won 107 yep. games and just barely won the division by one game before falling to the Dodgers in five. So you're going to have to win every bit of 100 games to even attempt to win this division. But I mean, I think they've made good moves this offseason, and who knows if they're in it. And I don't know who to throw out. The guy that keeps coming into the back of my mind is like a Paul Blackburn with the Athletics, just because he's talked about all the time being in trade talks that the Athletics could use. Can't think of another guy off the top of my head that could possibly be. But who knows? Maybe the Cardinals have a bad season again, and they're trying to get, you know, out of maybe a Sonny Gray or a Lance Lynn type of contract. Not get out of it, but just, you know, trade them for assets. Could the Diamondbacks be one of those teams that tries to trade for another starting pitcher, tries to trade for another, maybe a Jonathan India becomes available because the Reds no longer need his services because they're so backed up with middle infielders. And I know he's been talked about being moved. Do they try to go out and get a Jonathan India to try to bolster that lineup? Do they try to get somebody like that and make a move and try to go back to the World Series? Because the two teams that I think are going to be in it, or really the three teams that are going to be in it regardless this season, are going to be the Dodgers, the Phillies, and the Braves. After those three teams, two of which are in the same division, after those three teams, I think it's kind of anybody's game now as to who's going to make one of those wild card spots. You're going to have the Reds and the Brewers, maybe the Cubs this year fighting for that NL Central spot. But even then, the NL Central has been weak, so 88 wins could get you the Central, meaning if you have 90 wins, you're going to be over the wild card team from that Central, from the Central. So, yeah. I mean, I like what they did this offseason. I think they have a chance of at least making it back to the postseason and making a deep run, i.e. like what the Phillies did, where a lot of people thought that the World Series run was kind of a fluke, and then they go back to the NLCS. They could have made it back and should have made it back to the World Series, but you know, the Diamondbacks had other plans last year.
And I think a lot of people are also saying that 84 wins could realistically get you into the postseason. For a wild card team, especially with how terrible the Central is in both leagues, really, the AL and the NL. But for me, the Diamondbacks, I think the pitching proved itself last year, right? They sign Eddie Rodriguez. They sign Jordan Montgomery. Can the hitting keep intact? Now, they lost a veteran in Evan Longoria. Whoop-de-doo. But, you know, you got to hope Corbin Carroll doesn't have a sophomore slump. Like, the Diamondbacks offense, remember, the Diamondbacks offense is very young. And a lot of people predicted the Diamondbacks to lose the World Series, obviously, because of how young the offense was. So, you know, I do think they could take a leap. It's all going to determine, obviously, you know, how's Corbin Carroll going to do? Because ultimately, he's the anchor of that offense. And they've lost some veterans. They lost Longoria. Tommy Pham, apparently, I saw a tweet today, hasn't even been offered a contract by anybody, which is a little bit surprising. So, yeah, I mean, the Diamondbacks are going to have to rely on a lot of these younger guys this year. And then maybe, you know, at the deadline, go get a veteran guy and try and compete.
And here's the – it was MLB Network that posted it. But they also got Jock Peterson, which I completely forgot about.
Yes.
But you got Gabriel Moreno that's behind the plate. Looked really good last year in his first full season behind there. So he's going to be able to get there. You got Lauri Gurriel Jr. back. Alec Thomas should make a big step up. He's a really good defensive center fielder. You still got guys like Perdomo who played great defense for you at shortstop. I said Suarez. You still got Christian Walker, Ketel Marte. You know, now just a thought that crossed into my mind. Again, going back with the Cardinals, they have a couple of expiring contracts. I could potentially see a reunion at least for the last couple of months of a Paul Goldschmidt in the Arizona Diamondbacks.
You're outside
because he's on an expiring contract, and maybe this is just a hot take. But
let's see.
I don't know. So I'm gonna preface by saying I don't know what you would have to give up to get him. If it's gonna be a we need your three of your top five prospects, no, don't do it. But if it's gonna be a couple of low A guys where the Cardinals are just trying to replenish their system, maybe a number eight prospect for Paul Goldschmidt for a couple of months just to try to get you. Say Jock Peterson just has a terrible year and you need somebody to fill that DH spot, or you need somebody to be able to play first base, or you move Christian Walker back to DH, put Goldschmidt at first base just for the rest of the year to try to go make a run. You're telling me that that's not a possibility and I'm just outside my mind?
No, you're outside your mind. You're outside your mind. The Cardinals are going to try and compete. You don't think the Cardinals are going to try and compete?
No, I think they are, but I'm saying if they're bad.
If they're bad, right? If
they're bad again like they were last year, Goldschmidt's on an expiring contract. Would you not try to get some assets for him? And that's where I'm saying I can see if the Diamondbacks are two games out of the wild card spot come July, the middle of the July, and the Cardinals are 10-plus back of not only the division but the third wild card spot, and they just say, okay, we're going to try to offload some of these contracts, and we're going to try to just replenish our system.
I think if you're going to trade Paul Goldschmidt, if you're the Cardinals, I think you're trading him to an American League team. Because ultimately, the Cardinals have plenty of offense. I do think that they're going to compete somehow, even if it's just for a wild card spot. And the Diamondbacks are going to be a team that you're going to be competing with for that wild card spot. I don't think the Cardinals are going to be hitting the floor. I really don't. And if you're going to trade Goldschmidt, I think there are other places where you can get better assets for Goldschmidt. Now, do the Diamondbacks have some good pitching prospects? Sure they do. But a lot of other teams have better pitching prospects than the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'll tell you that for a fact.
No, trust me, I know that, but I'm saying this as a... I guess this is a little bit of a hot take, but I'm just saying
it's a hot
this
take,
as
it's
a,
hypothetical.
If the rotation for the Cardinals, which is, I think, an average age of like 50 years old, just absolutely takes a nosedive and they want to get rid of some of their expiring contracts, it's probably not going to be Sonny Gray. It'll probably be a Lance Lynn, who I believe is just signed for a 1 or 2 year deal. Maybe a Miles Michaelis, they'll try to trade. But I'm saying this as just a purely hypothetical. If the Cardinals had the exact same season they had last year, I could see them trying to move on from some of these guys.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we you know, a lot of people, and I was pretty fortunate to be in, you know, be around it last year, to see, or hear the rumors of, you know, trying to get rid of Arenado or Goldschmidt. These are two big dogs. Like, for me, it's like, if you're Paul Goldschmidt, you're going into the final year of your contract, I think he gets a little bit of leverage of where he wants to go. I mean, does he like St. Louis, and does he want to stay, or is he going somewhere else and wants to go there? Maybe the guy likes California. I don't know where Paul Goldschmidt's from. It seems like everyone's from California. Maybe he wants to play for the Rays. Maybe he wants to play for the Marlins. Who knows?
I feel like
Goldschmidt's just one of those guys where it's like, all right, the Diamondbacks chapter has happened. We're done. That's just how I feel about it. I'll keep it in the back of my mind. So when you're right in July, you can crucify me. But yeah, I personally think that's a little too hot on the take.
Now, this is all to say that I think that they will be at least contending for a wild card spot. So I don't think this is going to happen. I'm just saying I could see it potentially happen. It's like a 10% chance that it could happen, that maybe not to the Diamondbacks, but I could see them selling off Lance Lynn, Arenado maybe. I don't remember how much he's got left on his contract. Paul Goldschmidt. Who else do they have? I don't know if they would get rid of Lars Nootbaar or something like that, because he's still too young and has too much team control.
Maybe Matt Carpenter has a Yankees renaissance and they trade him, which is not gonna happen.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's possible.
You know, I don't know if anybody would take on Contreras' contract, because he's got, what, 4 years left, including this year? Because it was a five-year deal that he signed.
Yep.
So I'm just thinking, I don't know if they would trade Sonny Gray, because he's still got 2 years of kind of a lot of money. And he can still anchor a rotation for you with some young guys coming up. I think it's all just going to depend, too, about how Jordan Walker, how Matthew Liberatore, guys like that. If Lance Lynn pitches the way he did with the White Sox and not with the Dodgers, then I think they're going to have a lot better of a chance of making a wild card spot. If Lance Lynn just looks like he did when he got traded to the Dodgers and he just absolutely sucks, then I think they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Especially if Liberatore doesn't take that step up, too.
And Lance Lynn gives up a ton of home runs.
Yeah.
I mean,
and in that ballpark in the summer.
Yeah. Those things fly.
Yeah.
So maybe the Cardinals won't have a good year and Paul Goldschmidt will go to the Diamondbacks. Who knows?
And I've only say the Diamondbacks just because we were talking about them. I think
naturally.
I think there are multiple teams. You know, if the Red Sox somehow are in it, maybe they go to they try to break a deal with them. I don't think the Yankees. I definitely don't think the Rays.
No.
I don't think the Orioles are going to want to give up too many assets for Goldschmidt to put him at first base. I don't even know who their first baseman is right now, because they don't have Trey Mancini, so I don't know who they're playing at first. Because they don't have Aaron Hicks to put back there.
They don't.
He's with the Angels now. It'll be interesting to see. Because they got some expiring contracts too. And they're in a win-now mode just because they traded for Corbin Burns.
Yes.
And they got all these young guys coming up, and they won 101 games last year. So maybe you're right. Maybe it's more of an American League team, AL East. Blue Jays kind of don't make sense, but they kind of do in a way, just because they're desperate to win. Like, the Blue Jays, I think, are one of the more desperate teams in the American League, to where they have to make a deep run in the postseason before Vladdy and Bo Bichette's contracts come into play. Because, I mean, you already lost Matt Chapman and you had Josh Donaldson there for a couple of years, and there was nothing that you did so far with Vladdy and Bo Bichette other than make the wild card series and then get swept.
Right.
By the Twins of all teams, who didn't win a playoff series in 18 years. And that's the team that you lost to.
Yeah.
So I think if there's anybody that's going to make a desperate move around the trade deadline that we talk about, I don't know if I would have given up that for him, I could see it being the Blue Jays, because there's nobody else in the Central that's going to be desperate. The Tigers aren't, because they're still rebuilding. The Royals aren't, because they're still rebuilding. Who am I missing in the Central? The Guardians, they're going to probably win that division, but they're not going to be desperate enough to trade for anybody. They're probably going to trade pieces away, depending on how they are, like Bieber or they already did that with Quantrill. They're not going to give up McKenzie.
No.
Who else is on that staff? Tanner Bibby is a great pitcher that I think is going to have some longevity there. And then I'm missing two other teams. Yeah, he's back with the Guardians. What are the other teams that I'm missing in the Central?
We got Guardians,
Royals,
we got the Tigers.
Oh, the Twins. The Twins are actually, maybe the Twins might get desperate.
Did you mention the Tigers?
I did. I said they were in a rebuilding area.
Dark horse Cy Young candidate, by the way. Ready?
Don't say Casey Mize.
No, definitely not.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this. Go ahead, say
we're going Tark Skubal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that guy.
I like him too, because every time I see him, it reminds me of the windup of Scott Kazmir, which is one of my favorite pitchers.
Yeah.
Don't know why, but I just want to know if he watched a lot of Scott Kazmir, because he looks exactly like him on the mound.
What a gem. I mean, you get picked in the ninth round. You're not expected to do anything, right? Hopefully this dude stays healthy this year. I'm rooting for the kid. 7-3 last year, 2.80 ERA, only started 15 games. It was limited. Had a solid spring from what I've seen with the numbers. And other than his first 2 years, you know, 2022 started 21 games, so he wasn't really healthy. Went 7-8 with a 3.52, not half bad. And 7-3 with a 2.80 in 2023. Gerrit Cole's out, right, for the first month. Blake Snell did not sign with an American League team. Neither did Jordan Montgomery, he's not a Cy Young candidate anyways. So, who knows? Dark horse. But I don't know why people think the Tigers are going to be good this year. I don't see it. When you have Javi Baez hitting 0.57 in spring training, problem.
Maybe if you would have been able to keep E-Rod and you would have had a rotation of him and Skubal at the top, and then Casey Mize finally stays healthy and finally pitches like he was supposed to, and that offense kind of turns it around and Torkelson actually becomes the number one pick that, you know, was projected to be, or, you know, he becomes that talent that he was projected to be. 100 losses this year, maybe?
Yeah, I'm right
a
up
lot
there
of,
with you.
Somebody had A.J. Hinch as manager of the year for one of their predictions, and I'm like, you're
the
not
award doesn't
give
get
them...
given. The award doesn't get given to the teams who lose the most games.
Yeah, I mean, even if, like, how many games did they win last year? Like 65? Because even if you win 75, even if you have a 10-game slump and you win 75 games, he's not going to win Manager of the Year.
They went 78-84.
They went 78-84 last year. And they lost Eduardo Rodriguez. So now...
But look at the other teams that have improved.
Where do those wins come from?
Where do the wins come from?
Yeah. Because look at what the Royals did. They got Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo to kind of bolster that rotation. If Brady Singer takes a step forward this year after a bad step back, the Royals are going to finish above them.
Right.
Vinny Pasquantino, Bobby Witt Jr., you got Salvi Perez
Guardians,
still there.
Guardians also will probably finish above them this year.
The Twins definitely finish above them.
You got to remember, the Guardians essentially collapsed last year at the end of the year.
Yeah. And then who are we missing? Who's the 15?
Those numbers kind of get a bit skewed. The White Sox.
The only team that might finish below the Tigers are the White Sox.
They stink.
Which, shout out my boy Jordan Leisure, who
there you go.
Made the opening day roster. Sorry, I had to.
Congratulations,
had to throw that
to in. Congratulations, Jordan. But they still stink.
Yeah, no. He'll be one of those closers or setup guys that has like a. Like a 2.5 ERA or something with like 30 saves, and they have like 60 wins.
So like Estevez like, from the Angels.
Yeah. Do you remember? I think it was also like, I forgot who it would have been. It would have either been Fernando Roddy or Rafael Soriano with the Rays. I think had like 45 saves, but the team itself had like 64, 68 wins.
Rodney sounds like that. Right. Rodney sounds right because he was on some bad Mariners teams.
No, but I'm talking about with the Rays.
Oh, with the Rays.
This would have been the year after Madden left. So hold on, 2006.
That's 2015. 15.
Oh, 2015. 15, thank you. 15.
Maybe I know the Rays better than you, Peter.
Yeah, because that would have been his first year with the
Cubs. Yeah, with 15. Who was the closer of the Rays?
Oh, no. See, they went 80-82 that year. So it would have been 2014? No, they went 77-85. There was a season that where they were bad. Oh, yeah, here we go. It was 2016, but it was the second year of Kevin Cash. They went 80-82 2015. Then they went 68-94 the year after. And like somebody had, let's see. I know, yeah, Evan Longoria that year had 36 home runs and 98 RBIs on a terrible team. Brad Miller. Oh, my God. Brad Miller was on that team, hit 30 home runs.
It was a machine.
Jesus Christ. Was that Logan Morrison, too? No, Corey Dickerson, though. Yeah, Logan Morrison was Kurt Casale was your catcher. Let's see. Okay, where are we? Bless you. Chris Archer, nice, your man. Ace, was 9-19. Alex Colomé had 37 saves that year. That's right. He had a 1.91 ERA. Oosh. That's who it was. Alex Colomé went, yeah, 57 games, 37 saves, had a 1.91 ERA, and was our best good. Pitcher.
He had a good little stretch there, like very yeah. underrated stretch.
As here comes my cat. So, but yeah. No, so the Rafael Soriano, Fernando Rodney days were back when they were good, because Rodney was more like 2010 to 2012, and Rafael Soriano was like 12, 14-ish. So then it was Alex Colomé who was there.
Sounds about right.
I forgot how we got onto that topic of the Rays being bad.
We were talking about bad. We were talking about your buddy.
Bad closers, yeah.
All right, so your buddy, a bad closer?
No, or good closers on bad teams. There we go. He probably won't listen to this anyways. I don't know. Maybe I'll send it to him and just tell him that
you
he's never bad. Know.
You gotta believe. You gotta believe.
All right, so I wanted to throw these numbers at you before we switch to some college baseball.
It's here.
Saw these on Twitter. Or X, whatever you want to call it. Bellinger signed for 3 years, $80 million. Snell signed for 2 years, $62 million. Chapman was 3 for 54. Montgomery was 1 for 25. Right? Boris wanted 9 years, $270 million for Blake Snell. Right?
That's it.
He ended up getting combined with those four guys 9 years, $221 million.
He messed us up. I mean, that's the only thing you could say. Like, what was the gauge? It wasn't waiting for Ohtani. Ohtani was his own market. That was his own show. Everybody knew he was going to get an outrageous deal. Shohei Ohtani was not set in the market for any of these guys. If anything, Blake Snell was set in the market for the rest of the pitchers.
Yeah.
Cody Bellinger, right?
Bellinger and Chapman were going to kind of reset the market for
Bellinger was probably the guy to set the market for the hitters. Yes. Especially Chapman, so, you know, third baseman, power, not a lot of average. He's really the big guy of that class. So Boris messed this one up, man. I mean, I don't know how he operates, but this is a big time F in the grades for Mr. Boris.
Yeah. And this is how it was broken down. Because somebody kept a really good note of this. Bellinger was seeking $200 plus million, signed for $80 million with Chicago. Blake Snell was seeking around $300 million, was offered $168 million from the Yankees and declined it before signing for $62 million with the Giants. Chapman was trying to get $150 million, declined $100 million from Toronto, and signed for $54 million with San Francisco. Martinez, JD, was trying to get $50 plus million, declined $15 million from the Giants to sign for $12 million with the Mets. And then Jordan Montgomery was trying to get $170 million. I saw a report that he was trying to get something bigger than what Nola signed for, which was $7 and $172 million. I think Nola's a way better pitcher than Montgomery. I think Montgomery 100%. Was trying to use the fact that he won a World Series and was a really good pitcher in that postseason for the Rangers to get that $170 plus million, but signed for $25 million.
And just looking back at, I mean, we had, or at least I had Blake Snell signing 7 for $215 million, which he was trying to get 7 for, what did I say? He was trying to get 9 for $270 million. At least that's what Boris was saying. And then Chapman, I had him signing for $165 million with the Toronto Blue Jays, and he was offered $100 million. So
our cards that we made were all wrong. But I do want to say that
they were better offers. Yeah. They were better deals. We were giving them better deals than what they signed.
Maybe we should be the agents.
Listen, I have a master's in sports management.
There you go.
So let's.
I will say the one thing too about JD Martinez. There was an article that came out that stated that JD Martinez simply didn't want to go to San Francisco. So that's why he turned down the $15 million. You know, just because the ballpark just doesn't fit him. Yeah. But so that one I understand. But these others, that's on Boris.
I mean, I guess an underrated team too that we're not talking about is the Giants, because now you're gonna have Logan Webb, who finished top three in the Cy Young last year, and you have Blake Snell, who just won the Cy Young last year.
I think if there's a team that benefited from all this horrible Boris offseason, it's the Giants, because the Giants have always been the team that's willing to spend the money, and just nobody wants to go there. Maybe the Giants were the only one offering these guys these contracts by time mid-March came around. So, you know, maybe the Giants finally have their roster that they've been dreaming about for the last, like, 5 years.
think about the roster that the Giants potentially could have or could have had. I don't know if they would be able to sign all these guys, but they offer Carlos Correa a bunch of money. Don't get him. They offered Aaron Judge $300+ million. Don't get him. They offered Otani. I don't know what they offered him, but I know they were interested in getting him. They don't get Otani, obviously. And then you could have had Chapman, Snell on your team as well. JD Martinez, potentially. Am I missing a big free agent that they were trying to go after?
I mean, they've been going after a lot of guys over the years. But, I mean, just look at some of the guys they've had on their roster and couldn't re-sign. I mean, like Chris Bryant, they didn't re-sign him after he was traded there. This is going back way back, but Beltran, who they got in the Zach Wheeler trade way back in the day. He was still a pretty solid player back then. Didn't work. And yeah, they've been in on it. I mean, they tried to trade for Stanton. Didn't work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have...
I'm sure you're wishing that did work.
Yeah, well, I'm going to give it one more year before I make my assessment on that. But yeah, maybe this was just the Giants' time to put it all together, and they got lucky.
Yeah, who knows? All right, that's the MLB side of things. Time to get into some college baseball side of things.
Before we get to the college baseball side of things, did you hear about our sponsor for our MLB discussion on today's podcast?
Oh, God, no.
You didn't hear about it?
No.
All right, so our MLB talk today was brought to you by our good friends over at IMBets. IMBets is a luxurious gambling company, now expanding into the United States after being based in Southern California, that is revolutionizing the betting game. Now, what they do is that you bet with other people's money, so that way you don't lose. That's how IMBets has been working for the last 5 years. So, if you want a promo code for some bonus bets, your promo code is Shohei for a free $4.5 million.
I don't know how I forgot about this. We got to talk about that. That was a great promo. You had me until I realized that I am as Ipe
Mahuzahara.
Mizahara. Oh, my God. Okay, so I got to ask you this. When Otani had his press conference, were you shocked that he kept with the "I knew nothing about it," Ipe stole all my money, and that it was like he said it was a friend that Ipe was trying to pay it off for, and then Otani realized it was Ipe that stole the money?
So, because
me personally, I was surprised that he went with that.
So I don't know why.
Yeah, so at first, before the press conference, I found it a little strange to me that you don't know, that you're oblivious to the fact that there were 9 wire transfers with your name on it for $500,000 and had no clue. I know the guy makes a ton of money, but you know when $500,000 gets taken out of your bank account. Like, that's obvious. But when he gets up there on the press conference, I guess it was Monday now, to me, honestly, like, it sounded genuine. It sounded like he was frustrated. He wasn't reading off his script. It was a genuine, seemed like a disdain for what happened. And now it's really like he couldn't answer questions. I like how he changed it from he was going to answer questions to not answer questions, because he can't answer the questions. This is an MLB investigation now. So to me, at least, my conclusion after the press conference was that it seemed really genuine. He didn't read it off a piece of paper. Even the new translator, there were some instances where he thoroughly had to explain what he was trying to say in order for it to be put out in English. So I side with Ohtani on this one, to the fact where I guess he didn't know about it. And I get it, when you're making $100 million a year, which is not baseball salary, it's, you know, New Balance endorsements, whatever. Maybe you don't know when $500,000 gets taken out of your account. But I think it's just, there's definitely some sort of fraud that went on. But no, I side with Ohtani to the fact that he basically got betrayed.
Yeah, and like everybody was saying, how could he have access to his bank account? How could he do this, and that? And to me, it kind of seemed obvious, because if Ohtani needed everything translated, if he went to an American bank, I know he's not going to use Bank of America, but we'll just use that as an example.
Right.
If you and I went to the bank and you only spoke Spanish, and I had to translate everything from English to Spanish, and I had to get all of your bank information to give to this guy, then I could plausibly have all of your bank information to then use to my own whatever I wanted to do, use for my own volition. So that completely makes sense, that if he had to open a bank in the States and eBay had to translate everything that he was getting from the banker over to Ohtani, and then from Ohtani back to the banker, I could plausibly see how he would get his money. And then I had this example, and I know $500,000 is a lot more than $10, but if every time you went to the bank to deposit money, and I took out that same time that I put money in, I took money out, and I took out $10, you were putting in $500 for a check for the 2 weeks, and I took out $10. How long would it take you to realize that I've been taking out $10 every 2 weeks? Because to me, that would be one way that you could steal that much money, as if, you know, say New Balance wrote you a check for a commercial for, you know, $5 million. And what you said, hey, can you take this to the bank and put it in for me, because I, you know, whatever. And I said, okay, I'm going to take out $10,000 while I put this $5 million in. It could be plausible that it could take you a little while to realize that money's missing, because every time I put money in, I'm taking it out.
And that, my friends, is why you should listen to the podcast, because that, and I'm being dead serious when I say this, is the best breakdown I've heard on this whole situation. I'm not kidding.
Appreciate it.
I mean, that is as legit as it comes. You know, everyone wants to keep it baseball, right? But, you know, let's go into the real life. That's a great point right there. Great point.
Because that makes complete sense to me. That one, if I had to translate everything for you, I would have your information. Or if you needed my help, if you needed me to do something with your bank because it was in English and I needed your information to get in, we're sitting at a laptop or whatever, you know, you're sitting to the right of me and I need your information, you tell me your information, I put it in, I have then your information.
Right.
And then the same thing too, that's what it seemed to me like. If you put in $500 a week, but I'm taking out $10 before I even put the $500 in, how long is it going to take for you to realize that I've been taking out $10 every week? 4-5 months? By then, I mean, I know it's only $10, so it's only going to be, what, 60 to whatever, you know, $80 or whatever. But still, that's $80 that you're then saying, oh, wait, how am I losing this money?
Yeah.
And when you talk about $100 million in everything that he's getting, New Balance, other endorsements. I don't know what other endorsements he has, but you know, New Balance is the big one that he's with. But all these other endorsements that he has, and he's putting $100 million in, what's $500,000 to that?
Right. Right.
So, yeah. But I was, when he said with a straight face, excuse me, you know, Ipe has been stealing my money, and I knew nothing about it, I went, oh my God. Like, I don't know why, but it just, the way he said it and the conviction that he had, I was like, oh my God, like that's the story that they're sticking with. And that just, I think that opened up a ton more can of worms than I think I would have thought it would have opened. Because not only are you going to have the investigation, obviously, into Ipe, but if anything does come out about Shohei, he's going to be in a lot of trouble. Because everybody wants to compare him to Pete Rose, and he's not Pete Rose yet because, you know, he came out and said he hasn't bet on baseball, he hasn't bet on any other sports. But if it comes out that Ipe was the middleman for Shohei Ohtani, you're looking at this generation's greatest player now getting banned from baseball for forever. And now it's... I saw a video, and it kind of explained, you know, the why it's so hard to fall in love with baseball and stay in love with baseball is because you had the strike that happened in the 90s. Baseball was great in the 80s and early 90s, and then you have the strike. So now everybody is like, oh my God, I don't think I can trust baseball. Then you come back with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. Everybody starts to fall in love again. Oh, wait, they're cheating. And then you come back, and now it's all of this, the strike that's happening, and everybody wants more money, and everybody's fighting over money and stuff like that. So it's getting very decisive between how fans are feeling, because it's millionaires fighting with billionaires. And now you could potentially have this. One of the greatest players we've ever seen that we're comparing to Babe Ruth, and now we can possibly be banned from baseball. So now we have to try to fall in love with it all over again.
Yeah, it's still a possibility. I don't think it's going to be the case, because the first article, the ESPN article, where they did a 90-minute interview with Ipe, the text message interview, like, he was answering those questions with full-out honesty that Shohei knew nothing about it. Shohei never bet on sports. And the last question went unanswered, which was, you know, did Shohei know that you were taking money out of his account to bet on sports? And he didn't answer the question. It was a text interview. So that, to me, signaled that he was the one stealing the money.
Well, the weird thing, too, is that the story changed. It was, Ohtani knew and he paid off my bets, which is a whole nother can of worms. But then it changed between them and the PR team or his representatives that said, no, Ohtani had no idea about it. And Ipe was stealing all of his money. So that's where everybody was like, okay, what's going on? And like the first thing... Like, because I was at baseball practice at the academy when this happened, and the first thing a lot of us thought about was, okay, is Ipe now the fall guy for Ohtani?
Yeah.
Did Ipe place these bets for Ohtani? It got out because they're investigating the illegal bookie that's in California, because I don't know if a lot of people that are listening to this know this, but it's illegal to bet in California, to have the sports bet in California, unless you're at a casino, obviously. But that was the first thing, is Ipe falling on the sword for Ohtani? And now it's like, all right, what can we believe? But either way, I mean, the bookie has even come out and said through his lawyers, he's come out and said through his lawyers that he never dealt with Ohtani personally. It was always Ipe, but, you know, he always bragged that he had a Shohei connection. So, I mean, I was talking to my dad about this. I don't think we're going to find out the full story unless it was Ipe stealing Ohtani's money. Then we'll find out the true story. But if it's something other than the fact that, you know, Ipe stole his money, then I think we're just going to find out through leaks.
Yeah.
You know, whatever gets leaked to the media, then we're going to find out, oh no, Ohtani was like, okay, you can have this amount of money to pay off your debts, but I'm not giving you any more. And like Ipe stole the rest of it or something, like, you know, whatever happened, something like that. Unless it comes out and says flat out that no, Ipe, every time Ohtani got paid, he was taking out some money to pay back his debts, and that, you know, the bookie thought that Ohtani was okay with it, so he put Ohtani on to whatever. So I think that's the only way that you're going to find out the true story.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that one. Right on the money.
So, but
Yeah, I don't know. Weird story that, you know, we're unfortunately during this investigation with how slowly just investigations move by itself. It's March 27th as we're recording this podcast.
It's going to take a while.
Maybe we get another. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Maybe May we get another update. But I doubt it. I doubt we don't get another update for the rest of the year, for the rest of the baseball season.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
I mean,
either.
We're definitely not going to get anything from Ohtani or his representatives because they're just going to say the same old, it's an ongoing investigation. We can't say anything about it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's a weird story. Weird, weird story. But real quick, too, before we actually do move on to some college baseball, good catch for that because I would have completely forgot about it. And then, you know, after the episode, I would be like, oh crap, we didn't talk about Ohtani.
You can thank our sponsor, I Am Betts.
Yeah, I Am Betts. Will Smith and the Dodgers are finalizing a 10-year, $140 million contract extension.
Heyo.
This came in actually as you were talking about Ohtani and what you thought about the press conference and everything. This is based off of Jeff Passan's, so obviously I would believe it. I'm trying to find the article here. But, yeah. All right. So, college baseball, I'll let you take the lead just because I know you watch a lot more college baseball than me, and you're going to have a lot more to say. I do want to talk about the Virginia Wake series that was a couple of weeks ago just because I jotted down some numbers about a guy that would have been my young lad of the week last week had we had our episode. So take it away.
Yeah, well, last week we didn't have an episode, and one of the things I was going to say in last week's episode was that NC State was going to be on my fraud list. Well, they got swept by Georgia Tech. They deserve to be on that fraud list, but they changed that this week. They go out in midweek, they beat Coastal Carolina, and then take a big, and I mean big, three-game series from Duke. Friday night, you have arguably the two best pitchers in the triangle going, Jonathan Santucci and Sam Heifel. The Wolfpack offense lights up Santucci. Sam Heifel, best start in a long time. 7 innings, 8 strikeouts. Only gave up 3 runs, walked just 1. Innings and strikeouts, season high for Sam. Mayor of Apex, by the way, gets a huge dub. Then Saturday, looks like Duke's going to even the series. NC State, what do? They score 6 runs in the 9th inning. Eli Serrano, walk-off 2-run jack. Pack take game 2 and then end up taking game 3. They're midweek this week, I believe, was supposed to be against UNCG, which got rained out. So, yeah, the Pack are back. They're now back in the top 25. They were out of the top 25 last week. They are now 22 in the nation at 15-7. So, good to see them rebound. Good to see them back in the top 25. We know their head coach, Elliot Avid, great coach. So, yeah, I mean, look, Eli Serrano's not having, you know, the great year that he had last year yet. He's still, you know, he's batting 305. You know, there's no complaining about that, excuse me. But you'd love for the homers to be a little bit up. I mean, he's got 4 on the year, but everybody's home runs can be moved up a little bit. But good for the Pack. They get a big win. Duke gets swept for the first time all year, so they move to number 11. Wake Forest ended up getting beat by Louisville in a game last weekend. So they somehow moved back up in the rankings.
Yeah, I didn't get that. We were talking about how they could potentially be like 22nd to 25th. And
yeah,
I don't know,
maybe even out
in the top 20.
Yeah, we were talking about them possibly being out. That offense has a lot of work to do. But yeah, Wake Forest moves back into number 12 somehow. Two teams that we haven't really talked about a lot. Florida and LSU squared off last weekend, and it was on Saturday night when Jack Caglione hit a game-winning home run in the 10th inning, top of the 10th, that is. Game was being played at Outlet Box, so Florida evened the series, and then Caglione goes out on Sunday and throws an absolute gem. So, and the
with
Gators,
a couple of stare downs in between there too.
With a couple of stare downs, it was great to watch, and Florida ends up taking the series from LSU. So we haven't talked about LSU a lot. this year. And I mean, you know, they're having a great year. They're 8 in the nation right now, 19-6. But, you know, Arkansas remains at number one. Peter, I know you want to talk about Florida State. They suffered their first loss to Clemson, who, by the way, Clemson's now up to number 3 in the nation. The Tigers, 22-2 this year. And you got to remember that Clemson lost Billy Amick to Tennessee this offseason. So they are probably better this year than they were last year.
Yeah, but Florida State had should have swept that series. They were up 4-0 at one point in the first game, ended up losing, run rule 15-5. And then in the second game, they were up 8-2, gave up 7 runs in the bottom of the ninth to lose the game 8 runs in the bottom of the ninth to lose the game 9-8. And then I don't know what happened on Sunday, but they were up 11-2 at one point, and again gave up what? That would have been they lost 15-13 or 16-13, so gave up 14 unanswered runs at one point, including a couple of game time grand slams by forgot his first name, something right. I should probably remember because he's giving me nightmares for the last couple of days. But it was really weird to see how good the offense was, but then how bad the bullpen was. And then we talked about it before I came on that they absolutely hosed Florida last night on Tuesday when they beat them 14-3 in run rule. So I can definitely see how they're 10 times better than they are last year, but that bullpen is going to be the death of them because Jamie Arnold goes out there, gives you 7 innings of one run baseball, and you end up losing the game 16-14. Like that's bad. I believe their bullpen this weekend, I think I sent it to you, gave up 23 runs between games 2 and 3. Between games 2 and 3, they gave up 23 runs in 8 innings. So that's going to be a killer. But a team that I want to talk about actually in the ACC, took 2 out of 3 against Wake 2 weeks ago when we couldn't talk about them. Virginia baseball. That offense is elite.
Underrated program.
And somebody that I want to talk about, I kind of wrote it down, getting ready for last week's podcast that we didn't get to. Catcher Jacob Ferentz, graduate student from Salisbury, first year with Virginia. He's gotten 16 starts this year. He's starting to start a lot more. Only started 2 of the 3 games against Wake Forest. He's been splitting a lot of time with Ethan Anderson, but then started all 3 games against Pittsburgh, started there midweek after the Wake Forest series against Georgetown, and also the midweek last night against Richmond. Against Wake Forest, went a modest 5-for-8 with 3 home runs, 5 RBIs, 2 doubles. At the time that I wrote this down, he had 5 home runs total, 14 RBIs, and was batting .452. He's now batting .491 with 7 home runs and 17 RBIs. He also added a triple for good measures against Pittsburgh. But that Pittsburgh series, the first game of the series, he goes 4-for-5, a triple, 2 home runs, had 12 total bases, and scored 3 times.
Just so you know, that batting average, if that qualified, would be 2nd in the nation right now to Charlie Cotton.
Yeah. And the only reason it's not qualifying is because he's splitting time with Ethan Anderson, which I think is going to change a lot because he's got 16 games started now. He started the last 4 games in a row. So I think he's going to be the catcher going forward for Virginia baseball, which, I mean, against that Wake team, because they also took all 3 against Pittsburgh. So they're up there in conference standings. Let's see where they are conference wise. Play at Duke this coming Thursday. They're 6-3 in conference, but they look like a sleeper of a conference champion.
They lit up Wake. They absolutely did. And now Wake didn't have Michael Massey going in the Sunday game. They had the lefty freshman LeFou, I think his last. That's how you pronounce it. He was pitching on that Sunday. But anyways, Virginia's 2nd in the nation in batting average as a team, .359, 2nd behind Wofford. And think about the shoes this Ferentz kid's got to fill, right? Kyle Teal, who was a first round pick of the Red Sox, leaves, and now you're toying with 2 different catchers. And everyone, it's not like You could put one catcher in and sit another. Like, everyone's contributing on this team. This is how potent that offense is. That ballpark is just, you know, you can hit homers in that ballpark. If anyone watched Virginia baseball and remembers the name Jake Geloff from the last couple of years, you know how many homers can be hit in that stadium. So, yeah, look, this is a team that, you know, the pitching was better last year, but the offense, I think, is going to carry them. And, you know, I said it would come down to Duke and Wake at the end of the day, and as of now, I still believe that's the case. But, I mean, Virginia has always been up there, and Virginia was always that next team to slide in. When I'm sure Wake Forest, you know, if they lose a series this weekend, Virginia's going to slide right into there for me and be like, all right, this is the team that's taken. And you got Clemson to worry about, too.
Yeah. See, I think it's a lot more wide open than just Wake and Duke. I think there could you could potentially have five different teams win the ACC. Wake, yeah. Duke, Clemson, Florida State, Virginia. Which... I got to pump the brakes a little bit on Florida State just because, yes, you know, Leiter and Arnold are good at the top of the rotation, but the Sunday guy is still a little shaky at times. The bullpen's really shaky at times. And if Tibbs and Smith aren't really your catalysts, I know you have Cantu at the bottom of the lineup. I know you have Faroe and Farrer, but it's still a lineup that needs Cam Smith and James Tibbs to really be a catalyst for scoring a lot. And I think it's going to be their bullpen. I think their bullpen is what's going to be the downfall if Florida State does have one like they had against Clemson, because they still have a couple of really good ACC opponents that they have to face this year. So, but I think it's a lot more than just a two-man race now in the ACC, though. I think there's potentially five different teams that can win this conference.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, a lot of people are forgetting about Florida State. I mean, Clemson, obviously number three in the nation. So it is wide open. And I mean, the big news out of Deaktown is, I mean, Nick Kurtz isn't having a great start to the year, and now he's hurt. So I don't know what the term is on it, if it's a long-term injury, short-term injury, but he's been out the last week or so. But he's been struggling. I mean, 236, three homers, 10 RBIs. That's not Nick Kurtz that we've known for the last couple of years. Josh Hartle, same situation, except he's not injured. He's healthy, and he's got an ERA north of 7. I mean, he's just getting lit up when he's out there. He does not look like the same pitcher from a year ago. So you have to think, Peter, and this kind of came up in my mind yesterday, just thinking about the Deeks, like, you know, I normally do at 2 in the morning. Nick Kurtz, like, let's say he misses a good chunk of time due to injury, and even if he does come back, let's say he struggles out of the gate, could this be a scenario? You played college ball. Could this be a scenario where you see a guy like Kurt say, hey, like, let's move the draft idea to next year and let's give it one more year to figure it all out?
I could definitely see that, just because, yeah, they're gonna have the last 2 maybe 3 years of tape to look at you in summer ball and all this other good stuff, and they can tell you one thing and say another. But I wouldn't put it past him that if he doesn't have a good year this year, and maybe his agent comes to him and says, like, hey, you're sliding in the draft, you're going from a top 5 to a top 10 pick to a, you know, maybe a late first round pick, I could definitely see him coming back and trying to prove that, hey, listen, I was projected to be a top 5 pick for a reason. Let me show you. Now, next year, you're going to have a lot more guys to contend with for that top stick. You're going to have Tommy White. You're going to have a Cam Leiter. You're going to have a Jamie Arnold. Guys like that, pitchers like that, that are fighting for, you know, draft spots, plus whatever high school picks, you know, high school guys are coming out. But I could definitely see, and I've also been around guys that are like, okay, I think after this year, I'm going to sign. I was an NAIA school, so you're not really getting drafted, but you're getting signed. It's like, instead of trying to sign a free agent deal this year, let me come back and show scouts that, hey, you know, 1 year wasn't a fluke, and I can actually really be a really good player. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities as far as Kurt's coming back and saying, you know what, let me give it one more try. Let me show guys that I can stay healthy for a full 60 games, and, you know, let me be a top 5 pick.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume the same goes for Hartle, too. Kid's got an ERA over 7. Like, he might have a year like Christian Little did last year, where Christian Little came over from Vandy as, like, you know, supposed to be a top guy in the LSU rotation and just got absolutely lit up. He was a super late draft pick of the Mets, and he went back to school. So, you know, that could be a case as well. I think we're getting a little ahead. I think people are forgetting that, you know, there's still plenty of baseball left to turn these things around. And remember, the batting averages, guys, this isn't 162 games. It's 50 for a lot of these guys. So, you know, you can quickly turn around a 236 batting average into 320 pretty quick. So hopefully Nick Kurtz comes back. I don't exactly know what the injury is on him. You know, colleges are very, you know, they like to keep injuries pretty tight. So, yeah, we'll see if he comes back. The Deacs offense right now basically revolves around Adam Tellier and Seaver King. And Jack Winnay, who's having a great year. He's tied for the team lead in homers with 9, sophomore now. But and obviously Chase Burns is just an absolute dog, and he's fun to watch. So that's the Deacs. That's the ACC right there. I mean,
yeah, and we didn't even touch on teams like North Carolina, who, by the way, are 7-2.
Yeah,
in conference play right now and have a big series against Wake Forest. So, but just real quick to go back to the draft, because we were talking about, you know, Nick Kurtz. Another guy that could possibly do that too is J.J. Weatherholt. He's played 4 games. It was the first 4 games of the season. We haven't seen him since. This was a guy that was actually supposed to be the number one pick this year, as long as he had half a good a season as he had last year. I don't know what his eligibility is real quick. He's a junior, so he would be coming back for his senior year. That's the only problem, though, with coming back for your senior season, is that teams know you have no other option. You either get drafted or you don't, and you try to sign a free agent deal. I don't know what Weatherholt has as far as the COVID year eligibility, because now we're starting to get to the end of that, where everybody's just going to have a full 4 seasons of eligibility left. So that's the only bad part. Now, he's only played 4 years, so he could be a redshirt junior next year. Or he's only played 4 games, excuse me, so he could be a redshirt junior next year. But that's the only problem with guys like Kurtz or Weatherholt potentially coming back and not having, you know, another year of eligibility after that, is that teams know that, and they might not pick you so close to where you were projected to go just because they know that they can get around a senior coming out of the draft. That's why you go for a lot of either high school seniors or college, you know, draft eligible sophomores or draft eligible juniors. So, but that's another name that we haven't heard from is J.J. Weatherholt, who last year batted 440 something, 440. And this year, you know, started out good against I'm looking at his stats right now. Started out great against Stetson, but then after that, just absolutely nothing as far as games played. So, it can be another guy that comes back for his senior season.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what could happen? I think the draft board, like, Nick Kurtz never really screamed number one pick to me. You know, Charlie Condon at last check, I think, was the number 4 draft prospect. I mean, this could be a guy who moves up. Like, he's hitting 517, you know, mashing homers, and it doesn't look like he's slowing down anytime soon.
Him and Jack Caglione, I think, are fighting to see who's going to be the number one pick this year.
I like that.
And I think Caglione cemented himself as long as he stays healthy, as long as he keeps producing the way he's doing, I think he's going to be a number one pick this year.
I think Caglione's got a little bit more. I think Caglione's got a little bit more street cred. You know, just because it's Florida, they've played in the College World Series, and obviously he's a two-way guy, and literally Charlie Condon is pretty much all Georgia has. Not taking anything away from him, but like he is that Georgia team.
And we didn't even mention like guys like Wyatt Langford.
Yeah,
you know,
how about that?
He got drafted last year. He made the opening day roster with the Texas Rangers. So now I'm just looking at the top 5 picks for next year's draft. The number one pick is the Cleveland Guardians. You don't think that Jack Caglione could be a Wyatt Langford? You put him in the same rotation with Tanner Bibby, Tristan McKenzie, if they still have Bieber at some point. But Caglione could be your third guy and also be your first baseman. The Cincinnati Reds with Hunter Green and Ashcroft,
guys like that. Colorado Rockies might give him some more time just because they're absolutely terrible. Same with the Oakland Athletics, but the Chicago White Sox. You know, if they're going to move, they already moved on from Jose Abreu. If they're going to move on from Andrew Vaughn, those are teams. There's a lot of teams. I don't think he's going to fall that far, number five. So I can't even say about like the Cardinals or the Angels or something like that. But I mean, you're looking at two teams in the Cleveland Guardians and the Cincinnati Reds that if you draft Caglione and Condon 1 and 2, they could potentially do what Wyatt Langford did. Even if the Guardians or the Reds draft Chase Burns 1 or 2, I think you could see Burns in a rotation just as quickly as we're going to see Skeens in a rotation.
Yeah, I like you thinking there. I think it's going to lean towards more of a pure hitter. You know, I think because Caglione's a two-way guy, they want him to get pro innings, kind of like what Skeens is about to do. So I feel like if there is a guy who's going to make a big league club next year, I think it's going to be Charlie Condon. I mean, I think this dude is just a pure – he's a pure hitter. He's just he just is. And you look at the last 2 years, the first guy out of the 2022 draft class to get put in the show was Neto. So, you know, he plays shortstop. He's a solid bat. He bats ninth on the Angels, but, you know, he'll move up slowly in the lineup as his career goes on. But yeah, I mean, Wyatt Langford crushed it this spring training. I mean, he's going to be a big bat for them. I mean, he got a call up. You look at some other call. Victor Scott got the call up for the Cardinals with Dylan Carlson going down. I got to see Victor Scott in the first half of the minor league season last year. So cool to see him get the call up, and he'll be starting in center field tomorrow for St. Louis. So yeah, he's a dynamic player who I think Cardinals fans are just going to enjoy watching. I really do. He's one of the fastest guys I've seen.
When was the last time, though, if you can remember, that we've had back-to-back drafts where we could see potentially the first three or four picks be up the year after they got drafted? Because Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz could potentially be up this year at some point. And then, you know, you're going to have Chase Burns, you're going to have Condon, and you're going to have Caglione get drafted, who could potentially be up in the next year or so. So I don't remember a draft like this. You usually have like one or two guys.
Yeah.
But that's the only like player, spread out between a couple of years.
Yeah, the only player that I can remember from back in the day who, and this wasn't a thought right when he got drafted, but it was, you know, a surprise that he moved up so quick, was when Conforto got called up for the Mets. He was a first round pick in 14, and they, you know, they called him up in July of 2015, and you know he hit some big homers in that World Series that year, and has put together a nice career thus far. So, but that no one was thinking Michael Conforto was a big leaguer, you know, when he got drafted. Yeah. So I really couldn't tell you, like I had no clue,
because nobody thought Shanuel was going to do what he did. Tyler Finnegan, when the Royals drafted him and he went from TCU playing in the College World Series to playing with the Royals in the MLB World Series. But before that, it was David Price. And between David Price and Finnegan, it was, what, 5-6 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even a little longer than that. It was more like 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first time I can remember that we've had back-to-back draft classes where, you know, some of these guys are going to be up sooner than we think, just because they're that. I mean, Tommy White, when he gets drafted, could be one of those guys too.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how his approach is going to play in pro ball. You know, look, these college pitchers are amazing. And, you know, obviously Tommy White has been the cream of the crop for the last 2+ years of college baseball. But I wonder how his approach is going to fit the pro game, because I just feel like, you know, he's a very free swinger from what it looks like. You know, he's got a great eye, but he's a free swinger in terms of, you know, there's a lot of motion in his swing and all that stuff. So I don't know. It's all going to translate to pro ball, but I think he'll hit. You know, I don't see a problem with him if he gets drafted this year.
No, he's a less of a contact type of guy to Dylan Cruz. Dylan Cruz is more contact with occasional power. Tommy White's just the complete opposite. He's got big time power with, you know, the occasional strikeouts, or not the occasional strikeouts, but a lot of strikeouts.
But I mean, that's all going to work itself out in the Pro Bowl. But I can definitely see him being like one of those guys. And I mean, the only reason really, you know, Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter weren't up as quick as they were supposed to be up is because Rocker got injured and had to, you know, didn't sign with the Mets right away. And Leiter's just been terrible in minor league baseball right now with the walks. So we could have seen, you know, three of the last four draft classes being the top five picks getting up in relatively quick fashion.
100%. Yeah, and it's exciting. Like, I don't remember even Jackson Holliday. Like, he's going to start the year in minor league camp. So
and this is going to be the third year since he's been drafted.
Yeah.
I think Rutschman was still the same way, too. I think it took him, like, 2 or 3 years to get up there.
Yeah, it took him two. And I think what a lot of people are starting to realize is that now it's become more focus on the college players because they have a little bit more seasoning. They're a little older. And quite frankly, the college competition is better than I think it's been ever, at least right now. So, listen, if you're playing in the College World Series, you have some really good seasoning, some good experience to make an impact with a big league club sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you can even see guys like a Rhett Lauder, who's not really getting talked about, but as long as he gets his innings in, a Chase Dolander, as long as they get their innings in, they stay healthy, they could probably be up by the end of this year, if not the beginning of the next year. So that's what, a year in the minor leagues? They just really need to get their professional innings underneath them, make sure that they can handle the rigors of a professional season. And you know, teams might be looking at them like, okay, they're good to go. Bring them up. Especially a team like the Reds who got young really fast, and their window might be open for a while with McClain and Cruz and Lauder if he comes up. Hunter Green looked really good last year at the tail end of the season. So, you know, that could be a team that might think, you know, let's just bring these young guys up and see what we got. We're going to have at least six seasons of them. Until they have to hit free agency, we have to pay them. So why not see what we can do with them?
As they should.
You got anything else to add there, Harris?
I got a young lad of the week because I got a team that's not being talked about enough that I want to give some credit. And maybe it's a little bit of a high point. There's a little bit of high point bias here. But the Oklahoma State Cowboys are playing some pretty solid baseball right now. And they got a couple anchors in the rotation. One of them being Brian Holliday and the other being High Point alum Sam Garcia, who, by the way, Garcia is having a huge bounce back year. This is a guy who could not find the plate last year for High Point, but the year prior was one of only 20 guys in the nation to have less than 15 walks. And he's now their Friday night guy at Oklahoma State, and he's pitching pretty well. But this Brian Holliday kid, I mean, a 1.87 ERA in six starts, 51 strikeouts over 43 and a third innings, and a 0.76 whip. Believe he got a win last time out against a very tough and scrappy, as we know, TCU team. He threw a complete game. He threw, you know, nine innings, only gave up two runs on four hits and struck out 14 in a complete game win for Brian Holliday over TCU. So, obviously, the Pokes, I'd like to talk about that a little bit more just because of high point bias, but Brian Holliday is my young lad of the week for throwing a CG.
There you go. Mine, unfortunately, I have to give it to Blake Wright. That's who I couldn't remember, the first name, Blake Wright. Obviously plays for Clemson, as you can hear in my voice. 13 for 22 last week, scored 10 runs, drove in 21, hit six home runs. By the way, that 13 for 22 is a 590 average. Two of his six home runs were game-tying grand slams against Florida State. Wow. Clemson went 5-0 last week. I, unfortunately, like I said, have to give it to Blake Wright because I don't know if you can give it to anybody else. I mean,
sometimes you just got to tip the cap, my friend.
Yeah. I mean, you drive in. I believe he drove in 18 RBIs this weekend against Florida State. When you do that, there's no other person I can give it to. And I personally watched him just torture them all weekend. So, yeah. Blake Wright, don't do it again, please. At least Florida State doesn't have to see him again unless they see him in Charlotte or in Durham for the ACC playoffs, ACC Conference Championship. So
Glad we don't have to see him again.
Wow, I'm ready for this. So this just came across my timeline. The Mets opening day has been postponed to Friday due to forecasted rain. So 22 hours before the Mets are scheduled to play ball, they say, yeah, we're going to make you wait an extra day. So, yeah, how about that? That's 2 years in a row, by the way, that opening day for the Mets has been rained out. And that's just why the franchise is always folding year after year.
Yeah. Just throw the whole team away.
Yeah, exactly.
So other than that, opening day tomorrow. Let's see. Who, as of right now, let's get into this. Who do you have winning your World Series? Who do you have playing in the World Series? Who do you have winning?
I got the Baltimore Orioles playing against the Let me explain here. I got the Baltimore Orioles playing against the Philadelphia Phillies in a nice little local sort of, I don't know what you want to call it. I don't know what that rivalry is called, but they're all in the same TV market. Kind
of like a tri-state metro like a, type of like a
Philly cheesesteak. Beach, some sort of rivalry, I don't know. And I got the Fightins winning this one in five games. Yeah, that's my pick. We're just going to put it out there just like that, no explanation.
Nice. I have Braves and Orioles. That's what I was saying.
I thought you were made that face because you said, how could you be crazy to pick the Orioles?
No, I have Braves and Orioles.
All right.
So I was just trying to see where you were going. I think the Braves have a bounce back year this year and actually beat the Phillies for once in a playoff series.
There you go.
For the first time in 2 years. So
could be.
Spencer Strider.
Biggest legs in the
league. Kind of a dark horse, kind of not a dark horse Cy Young candidate for me.
Biggest legs in the league. There you go.
So, yes. Yeah. So we'll see if we'll see how wrong we are, because the Orioles are going to lose like 1,000 games and the Braves are not even going to, you know, win the division. Watch.
Naturally. Yeah. Could be the case.
So it's gonna be I don't know. It's gonna be like the Giants and Astros or something like that. Not even. It's gonna be like the Giants and Blue Giants Jays. And Tigers again.
The Giants
2012 rematch.
Oh god. Oh god.
No, it's gonna be the Twins and Twins and Colorado Rockies.
Yikes. If that's right, the World Series, nobody's watching.
I'll turn the podcast off before we get
into it. Hey, thank you to our sponsor, by the way. IM Bets for us, a sponsor in the pod. Again, promo code Shohei for some free play.
You can show May the money. All right.
There you go.
See you later. For Harris Eisenberg, I'm Peter DeFeet Jr. saying so long. Enjoy opening day. We'll talk to you again next week.